Today's episode of The Mom Game is presented by our friends at Gateway GMC at LBJ and Jupiter. I know buying a car can be stressful, but not at Gateway because their slogan is Gateway's Got It. And just what does that mean? It means Gateway offers a wide selection of new GMCs and GM certified used vehicles, all competitively priced. Gateway's Got It. In these busy times, you want a car dealer who makes things easy and convenient? Well, guess what? Gateway's got it. When you log on to gatewaygmc.com, look for the shop, click drive button. This allows you to shop from the comfort of your home, and who doesn't want that? In fact, it's as easy as 1, 2, 3. 1, select your vehicle. 2, create your offer. 3, schedule your delivery. And on top of all of this, Gateway GMC offers complimentary car washes for life. So when you want a dealer who has it all, Gateway's got it. You can find them online at gatewaygmc.com or shop in person at LBJ and Jupiter. GMC, we are professional grade. And welcome into the Coppola Studios here on The Mom Game. I was doing the Gateway read. I was doing my best impersonation of Emily Jones. The reason I'm not I was doing that impersonation of Emily Jones is because she is obviously not here today enjoying vacation in Florida with her family, and I have a man standing for her. It is not a woman co-host. It is Jake Kemp. You might know him from the Dumb Zone. He's a good friend of mine, a good friend of Emily's. You've been on The Mom Game before, and now you get to sit in the host chair, Jake. How does it feel?
It feels very official. I don't know. Like, you guys are a lot more conscious about the way you present yourself, and now I'm looking at myself up there and it looks weird, and I wish I would have got a haircut.
Oh yeah,
I'm not super sure about this shirt either. I don't know, I remembered I was doing this show, I just forgot that it's like bright in here and it feels like daytime.
It's a little different from the main cave.
Kind of have a dungeon
vibe. Yeah. Well, it's all good. I mean, most of the people I think are listening, not watching. We like when people also watch, but it's not like everybody's sitting here judging your
hair. It's a good vibe in here though.
And your shirt, so you're
good. I like it.
Well, thank you for joining me with Emily out today. I was trying to figure out who could host the show with me, and I just really felt like, I don't know, there's a lot of stuff that I want to talk about with you, and I think maybe our listeners just want to kind of hear what all is going on in your world, what's going on with the Dumb Zone, and then we have a guest later in the show that I think is going to be just a great conversation, very pertinent information for us with anybody with kids when we talk to Sandra Hooper from Braintopia. But I guess just to kick off, Jake, tell us what's going on in the Dumb Zone world. You guys are moving and shaking. It's been over a year now.
Yeah, so I guess we started the show almost, I guess it's been about 2 years. We were able to start doing, you know, advertisements last summer. So I think of it as basically year zero and year one.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel weird. Like, I have to temper my positivity and excitement because I feel like Dan and Blake are very good at, like, let's make sure we don't get in over our skis here. But I don't know, the summer event was a real, like, it was a real cool moment for me because it felt like an in-person validation of, not like of the whole thing, but just of like, hey, this is just a group of people that can get together and like have a chill time. And we had businesses on board that they're getting results, like for their businesses. They're good people. We've yet to work with anybody that wasn't like somebody that I would work with myself, you know, like Brian from Qualys said, like, hey, we have a no asshole policy. And I feel like that's kind of like how we're trying to run this. And that it was just cool. A lot of people pitched in, and just to be able to actually physically and visually see it, as opposed to just like, oh, you can look at numbers on a webpage, like, oh, you have X amount of listeners or this many ads. But then just seeing everybody there, and it was very cool. It was very, validating, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to say it other than I love it. Like, it's the happiest I've ever been in my life. And work is a big part of that. Like, I think we have a thing where we get to make people happy every day.
Yeah.
And or change their mood for the positive in some way, shape, or form. And when you think about like the core of what your purpose is as someone who's in entertainment, like, that's pretty much it. And so I feel awesome every day. Like, the only days I don't feel awesome is if I'm like, that wasn't a good show. And I am very critical because I feel like in the podcast world, especially with some paid portion of our audience, there's days in radio where you can just kind of show up.
Yeah.
And I feel very nervous about that with podcasts. Like, so I feel driven because like we have an audience, the audience cares, they get something out of it. The advertisers get something out of it. So overall, like I'm pretty pleased with the both the hard numbers and like the vibe of the operation.
That's awesome. I'm sure you probably never saw something like this evolving in your world, say like 10 years ago when you were working at the Ticket, and that was the end all be all, right? It was like to become a host on the Ticket and then maybe ride off into the sunset that way. And now you've launched a business and brought your show over to a different platform, and you're also running the business side of it. But I guess two questions. You probably never saw this happening. And also, isn't it cool when you're working for yourself?
Yeah. So they're kind of related, right? The two questions.
Yeah.
My mom started running the business that she still sort of owns today. It's just changed names, changed form, whatever. Like she started it when she was 17.
Mm-hmm.
And so I worked for their business or for her business. My stepdad runs it with her now. And a lot of the stuff I was doing for them is not that dissimilar than what I do now, which is basically like, you know, you run the invoices and you order things and you pay people and ask them to pay you. And I don't know, that part of it I actually like doing. It's a little math problem I like figuring out. But no, I think 10 years ago, probably not, because I don't know that things had really started to shift in the media landscape fully at that point. But if you had said 5 years ago, you know, as we've been gone to like my last 3 years at the Ticket, I would say I had started to think at that point about like, this is all changing like really quickly.
Yeah.
And not even a shot at Cumulus or the company. It's just a big company. And big companies notoriously have a very hard time, you know, pivoting or moving with agility.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, at some point you do start to kind of think like, you know, if I look at what they're paying me right now, and I know people in other parts of the country who have roughly the same size, like, imprint that I have, who are making X.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, well, that means I think I can get to that. And that number was about what I was making at the station. And so I just thought, if I can get to that, like, we'll be fine. And I think now, you know, it's just, I don't know that you're going to become like Joe Rogan or something, but I think if you can find like a small dedicated audience and you know how to execute the plan, you can make like a good living doing this.
Yeah.
You can make like not like radio money from like 10, 20 years ago, but like roughly the type of money that I was going to make, like the new good money in radio.
And definitely something to be said for like creative freedom for one.
Yeah, I didn't even talk about that. I love
that. Schedule freedom, you know, to an extent y'all are doing your show still 4 days a week for 3 hours a day or whatever it is, but being able to kind of be in charge of your own world and
like no lie. This is the sort of thing I want to talk about on the Mom Game is male friendship. Mm-hmm. I don't like that I can't see Jasmine. They have a producer.
Uh-huh.
She's right behind me, but I can't see her and it's driving me crazy.
Well, it's going to be that way the whole show.
Well, I know. It's like, I feel like she's it's just like the FBI, like on the other side of the window. But
she's
what were we talking about? I don't remember.
Being in charge of your own schedule.
Oh, no. Well, Blake went to Red Rocks yesterday and saw Lindsey Stirling.
Oh, nice.
His electric violinist.
Yes.
And he told us a couple weeks or months ago, like, hey, can we move that week and me be off Monday? And we're like, yeah, sure. Go for it. Blake doesn't do anything for himself. He gets upset with me if I tell him he should take care of himself. So the secondhand satisfaction that I got out of the fact that he actually just went crazy with it.
Yeah.
Flew, met a buddy in Denver, and they drove to
see Lindsey Stirling at Red Rocks.
He flew back this morning. Like, that is why we left.
Yeah.
In my mind, I'm like, okay, you can just do that.
Right.
Like, and, you know, so it's cool. It's the content side. I feel like the show is better. One, because I feel like you have to try harder. And two, just it's not like we're like, I feel like if you just started cursing a lot, but I talk like that. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing is I'm not, I just sound more like me, I feel like, when we do our show.
Yeah. Well, it's been really cool to see it evolve. I'm happy to play a small role in it and helping you guys and being a part of things. And I love how we can all do it kind of in conjunction with the different podcasts existing at the same time and make it all work out. So it's been really fun. And I want to talk more about your, you know, personal journey and stuff in just a bit, but We got to do some sports real quick, and this is brought to us by our friends at Rev Entertainment. They have a really fun event coming up very soon. In fact, it is this coming Sunday, June 22nd. They're hosting Family Field Day. It's an action-packed, family-friendly day that will include fun activities for children and adults of all ages. You can take the field, experience the ballpark in a unique way. Tickets on sale now. All kinds of fun stuff. I brought my family out there a couple of years ago, and it's something that I think is a memory that they love to kind of hold on to. I love seeing the pictures. You can get out on the field and play baseball like the Texas Rangers. So quickly in sports scorts, Jake, which is what we call our sports segment here on the Mom Game. A little bit of Mavericks news this week with Cooper Flagg coming for his visit to get wooed by Nico Harrison. Not even necessarily like there's much wooing that needs to be done. Everybody already knows this is what's going to happen. He's going to be a Dallas Maverick with the NBA draft coming up later this week. My question to you is, like, how are we all supposed to feel about all of this? I know you're still upset about Luka. I'm still upset about Luka. The Mavs are going to obviously bring him in, try to get everybody pumped up. But, I mean, it's like I'm just kind of dead inside when it comes to the Mavericks still. I don't know about you.
Yeah, and it's a tough one. It's the classic, are you comfortable telling other people how they should feel? Which is always very hard to do. And that's kind of how where I've landed on this is, like, I feel the way I feel about it, and other people don't. Everybody has
Do you
their
know
own...
people that have forgotten that
no,
the Luka thing
I don't think
happened.
Anybody's going to forget it, you know, but it's what you come to sports for. In my opinion, not my opinion, but how I apply this may change story to story. Like Greg Hardy, for example, right? When the Cowboys signed Greg Hardy, that was like a big topic of like, this guy's obviously a terrible person. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, he got arrested again last week. But I remember having that argument of like, listen, like, this guy's, he's not here to be like a role model. This guy's here to be a violent maniac to get to the quarterback. And so in that case, it's like, all right, well, I'm kind of going to separate sports from, you know, the off the field stuff in that case. But there's other times where I don't do that. And I'm like, this guy's, you know, when the Mavericks hired Jason Kidd, I was like, this guy's got a history. You don't want this guy to be your in a leadership position. Like, we've got anger and domestic violence issues. So we all just pick like how it works and what we're looking to get out of sports because, but to me though, like a big,
it's very deep.
But that's the thing though. Yeah. And that determines how you feel about this to me because I go to sports because I just feel like I have like something in me that naturally makes me work better when I'm a part of a team. And there are some people that I think aren't like that. And some people are the same. For me, I think I'm definitely better if I'm with a group of other people that we're like pulling in the same direction. I think I bring more out of them. I think they bring more out of me. And so like that loyalty and that like community is the reason I like sports.
Yeah.
And Dirk, like having Dirk in your city growing up, it's like, he's just sports. Like if you just boiled everything about sports down, like what's this shit supposed to be about? Look at that guy, his journey. And to grow up with that is such a unique thing. And to have that completely like upended by the complete opposite, I don't think I can like really root for the Mavericks
Which
and feel like it's like a team.
Because
it's like I go to that for community and now I feel like it's not there. So like for better or worse, often medium or worse, the Cowboys are like, it does feel like a family.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. I don't think I'll ever be able to get back there, you know, with the Mavericks. So I wish everyone
you've
well.
Been huge Mavs fan your whole life. You write about the Mavs. You did the Mavs postgame show, everything else. Like, you're somebody that...
They mean a lot to me.
It means a lot to you, and it is. It's like they just kind of dumped you, like they shat on you, and now you can't go back to them if it was a relationship or something. It's just like, you treat me that way, and I'm just going to go find someone else to love.
And I could easily see a lot of people probably would just be like, dude, it's not that serious.
Yeah.
And I get that, but... my point would be like in all this, we're choosing to decide how we want to feel about it. Like if you're like, that's ridiculous. Why are you getting that deep about it? That's fine. If you're just like, I want to see the guy run and dunk a basketball. That's fine. But for me on this one, given the Dirk thing and how I grew up with it, I just think it's too weird. I don't think I can love them like that again.
It is weird.
Yeah. And
Nico and the Mavs and the management, they were just looking at things on paper. They're looking at money. They're trying to make a move, a business move, and I think had no idea how much.
Yeah, okay, that's what I was going to say.
We don't look at the Mavs on paper. Like, we are, yeah. We're all one big family here in Dallas.
And not to make it more of like a deeper thing, but that's what I was going to say, is that it feels in a lot of ways like sort of a microcosm or a test case for like a lot of things that are happening in life at this point, right? Of whether it's, you know, private equity taking something over, or, you know, I was texting with a buddy this morning actually about some Father's Day stuff. I mentioned this on the show today because there was a study that was posted the other day that dads today spend like 3 to 4 times as much time with their kids than our dad spent with us. But we also have like all these crazy mental health issues and anxiety and depression with kids. And we talk about this, like me and a group of dads. And my buddy, who's a doctor, had pointed out, like, you know, it's not that the spending time with your kids doesn't help. It's that we're up against like an impossible amount of tasks now.
Yeah.
Like the screen, basically.
Yep.
That it's not that it doesn't matter. It's just that it's just too hard, you know, to raise kids like that, because every single thing in life is supposed to be like about production and making money.
Right.
And so like you end up, you know, that's what we're up against, and our dads could do 4 days a month and it would feel as impactful as our,
I mean,
you know, every day. So the Mavs thing just kind of feels like,
yeah,
oh, the fucking cool restaurant on my street that's been there for 40 years is closing down because like some firm bought the building, raised the rent, and now they're like, I don't care if people have been coming here forever.
It's like the Loon. Yeah. Like the Loon for me, like that was the spot that was, it was just our go-to. Everybody went there. You know, you'd see everybody. The drinks were very strong. It was a lot of fun. It was about like the whole aura. It was the fireplace, the couches, like, and then they just shut down the Loon like very abruptly and opened up the Loon like 2 blocks over in Uptown. And we're all just supposed to go there and pretend like it's the same.
That's exactly how I feel.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Exactly how I feel.
Right. Like the big dogs in wherever they are, New York, looking at their sheets. Oh, okay. Well, we can pay a lot less for rent if we just go 2 blocks over here, and everyone will still go because it's still the Loon. It's like,
you probably could.
Right.
You could probably go drink there.
Right.
You know, and you're like, oh, this is kind of fun, but you're not. It's just not.
Exactly. So. And I'm with you when it comes to the Mavericks, and it's going to be really weird. I mean, it felt strange trying to watch them pull for them after this all went down, which obviously there wasn't much to pull for at that point. Everybody got hurt and they just started sucking and didn't, you know, end up in the playoffs. So, or they barely did, right?
I mean, and I feel, yeah, if you want to call
round,
it, they barely made it to the barely playoffs.
The play-in game, yeah.
But, I don't really know that much about Cooper Flagg. I know our friend Brian Damaris has an article today about, like, his high school time. But like
if nothing had happened with Luka, would we be excited about this guy?
I mean, he's...
Should we be...
Like, yeah, he's... Yeah.
Like, if he didn't have all this baggage attached to
and
him...
And that's the thing,
which
is
isn't even
I do
fault.
Kind of feel bad, yeah, for him. Other than, you know, the fact that, like, he's about to be the face of the league for whatever that's worth. I mean, he's incredible.
Yeah.
He's incredible. He's made for the
modern
NBA.
You're going to be a fan. Like,
well, yeah, I mean,
given a few months into the Mavericks season.
I'll watch, yeah. But... you know, it's also the weird thing of like part of sports is like hoping for people to do well.
Right.
But like the problem is like they play another team or and there's people you have to hope for people to not do well.
Right.
And if I want Nico to not retain employment in my city, like Cooper Flagg inherently has to fail.
Yeah.
So it's a tricky situation.
Weird. It's too much. It's too much for us when, to your point, you just want to sit down, watch a game, feel like you're part of a community, watch sports and root for your team. Now we have all these life thoughts when we watch the Mavericks. It's not an escape anymore. It's something that makes us think about life and how people are treated and everything. And it's too much.
I don't know how they ever changed that. You know, with him there, with the GM there, the owner I could see maybe could... You know, put somebody else in there and then just get out of the way.
Yeah.
Like you don't, like the Rangers have done over time.
Right.
But
I feel like that just has to happen.
I just don't, yeah. I mean, without that, I don't really see that they're just going to be able to have anything approaching a clean slate.
Yeah. Well, we shall see what happens. But
is your son into basketball?
Yeah.
Like, does he know about the NBA? Does he know Luka was traded?
Well, because mom was like pissed like the second it happened, and I yelled up to them as they were like waking up for school or whatever. And he's still, I think it's a talk of the little boys, like, can't believe the Mavs did that. They can't believe they traded Luka. And, you know, like He asked me if it was still okay if he got Luka shoes, like for the Luka basketball shoes. You know, he knows that it's a big deal, and he did. I made him sit down and watch Luka, like every time he was on TV, because it was that exciting and that special. And I thought, I was trying to tell him like how big of a privilege it is that he's on our team and that we can watch this person play every night when we watch our team play. So he knew who he was. He knew how big he was and how big of a deal that trade was. But kids these days, I feel like they just like, I mean, Ryder's a big fantasy guy. Like he likes the big name star athletes, not necessarily who's playing for Dallas teams.
I don't even, that doesn't bother me anymore. It is what it is.
It doesn't bother me, but I'm like, I wish he would just root for the, you know, the teams that are here that I root for instead of just wanting all these random jerseys or whatever, but it's fine. But yeah, I think that trade even rocked the elementary schools, Jake. I will say that when Luka was traded, the elementary schools were rocked along with all of Dallas. Okay, let's move on now to what's in your feed. And for this show, it's going to be what's on your feed and what was in your newspaper. This is brought to us by our friends at ADM, Audrey Dolan's Media. You've been working with Audrey, too. You know how awesome she is.
The best.
She's amazing. And she's helped the Mom Game really kind of take our brand to the next level. They can do a lot of different things for you and your business. They do influencer management, brand management, monetization management, collaboration management, influencer campaigns, content creation, photography, social media management, and website design so that you can focus on just your own business and not all the extra stuff. Okay, so we kind of touched on all of it, and I mentioned how deep and introspective I think you are now.
Just confused.
As a person, and I think a lot of us are confused. Yes, that's a good way to put it. But just personally, I know you've gone through a lot. I've been able to kind of see, I guess, the pre-Jake, the post-Jake, when it comes to working at the Ticket, and then this kind of big life change that you had recently, and you know that the people around you are, I think, all super proud of you and everything that you've been able to do. But this is public because it was in the Dallas Morning News. So that's kind of the article I wanted to talk about in the headline on it. Sports broadcaster Jake Kemp on getting sober and going public. So I know it's kind of probably like a three-pronged thing, like the build up, the, you know, epiphany, the going to rehab, and then the post. And I guess if someone were to ask you that doesn't know the whole story, how do you explain the narrative, I guess?
I guess I would start with, I don't think it really started any differently than most people. I started drinking in college. My parents drank, not like what I would say, I wouldn't say they're alcoholics, but you know, when you learn more about, excuse me, addiction and substance abuse, the number of drinks that people in the medical community consider like heavy drinking is way less than I thought. So I don't think my parents were alcoholics by any means. They weren't abusive, but I was around alcohol for sure. And then I just started drinking in college. And I think now that I've had a little more time, if you ask me a year from now, this may change. But now that I've had a little more time to think about it, I think it was just this makes me cool.
Yeah.
Your basic, like, I'm lacking somewhere, like insecurity, like I'm not athletic, I'm not like this or that, like what can I do? And it would be like, oh, I'll be a funny drunk. And that like kind of worked out for a little while. And then I think what happens is, you know, you're going through your 20s, maybe you're just, everybody's drinking a lot, but you're drinking like a little bit more.
Yeah.
And you just go a little bit harder that one time that everybody goes too hard. And at some point in there, it's shifting from like having fun or even relaxing to like, I'm doing this because I don't feel good about myself unless I do it.
Yeah.
And so you're really not getting anything out of it other than just trying to be normal. At that point, you're an addict, you know? So even if you're not drinking every day, if you're relying on it, you are an addict. So that's where I found myself. I had known that for some time. But see, the thing for me was, I was in this, like in the summer of 23, I went to an outpatient thing. It was 3 nights a week. It was 3 hours. And I did that for like 8-9 weeks. And then I went back one time a week for like another 2 or 3 months. I was sober for like 5 months. But the thing for me was I didn't think that I could quit for good because I didn't want to be public about it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I did that before, I didn't tell anybody, like my closest family members, like my friends barely even knew. If I saw them, I'd be like, oh, I got to run in the morning or something. A couple of them knew, but I couldn't tell. I didn't want to tell anybody, which is why I couldn't go to treatment. And then like at my outpatient deal, two different times I got emails from people that were like, hey, I saw you at outpatient last night at the place I go. And I was like, ah, that's not going to work because it's supposed to be anonymous. It's supposed to be, and they weren't rude about it. But then all of a sudden I was very concerned about, oh, this is going to get out there.
Yeah.
And so, ironically, or perhaps it just makes sense, the thing that got me sober and will keep me sober and got me accountable and will keep me accountable is the fact that I did it publicly. And the fact that I went from looking at it as something that was very woe is me and very like, well, I'm trying not to curse really hard, by the way, because it's your show. I'm thinking through in my head.
You're sitting in Emily's chair.
But I'll get way overboard if I start. So I'm trying. Yeah. I'm just telling you if I sound slow, it's because I'm like, don't do that. Okay, so I used to look at this and think like, this is way harder for me than it is for anyone else. I got this job where I'm expected to drink. Like I'm the drunk guy now. I'm in that class. You know, I do like drinking. So there's that. Like people don't know what this is like. People are offering me drinks every time I go out. There was a time maybe a month before I went to rehab where my wife and I went out with a big group of friends to go see the Quaker City Nighthawks at a bar in Fort Worth, and I didn't drink. My wife, Kelly, I don't know if she counted. She lost count. There was probably six people that came up to me, and they're like, look what death, like what the fuck? Like, dude, buy me beer, buy me shots. Right. And I didn't drink. And I'm like, people don't understand that this is different. Like, I have a different situation here. And if I come out and say I'm sober while I'm at the ticket, I mean, it's going to be dicey. Like there's going to be people who don't. And so I used to be like, people don't understand, like this is harder on me. But now the thing I decided to, I guess, interpret it as is I would not have gotten sober had Dan not been like, you've got to just do, because I was like, I'll go for a week. And Dan was like, no, we're on our own now. We have the ability, if you want to go for a month, go. And the fact that I told everybody where I was, and now if I go anywhere, everyone there knows I'm an alcoholic. Like, that's what's keeping me, I don't want to say what's keeping me sober, but you know what I mean? Like, that's a tool in my coping tool belt.
Yeah.
That when I'm at the Dumb Zone generic summer event, and I'm like, this is the most I've wanted a beer in 9 months, when it's over and it's hot and it's, you know.
And you're celebrating.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah.
And at that moment, you know, I'm like, well, no. I mean, obviously that's not going to happen.
Right.
So I view it as a blessing for sure.
Yeah. So I think like the parenting and the dad aspect of it all is interesting because, I mean, we all know a lot of people that turn to alcohol or turn to something else because life gets hard. And I think it's really hard to be a parent, like you kind of referenced earlier. It's hard to be a parent right now. I'm sure it was hard to be a parent back then. But I think a lot of people might not know how to deal with just those tough. I mean, if you put on like count on your hand, like how many things you're trying to juggle as a dad. You're trying to juggle your relationship with your wife. You're trying to juggle the kids' own issues, whatever it is, and then times two if there's two of them, and then all the dad duties, and then the going to work and the financial burden of it. And I think it's not something that maybe a lot of men openly talk about, and that's why I think your journey is it's really cool. It's really important that you are being public about it, but I guess how much of those like external factors of trying to juggle it all, figure it all out, like how much of that was it? Because it is, I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot for us as parents right now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I had it any harder than anyone else. It's whatever you're dealing with is hard for you. But yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's, you know, cause you get some things thrown in there, and certainly many people have had it worse, and again, it's what's in front of you, but
yeah.
You get like thrown a hurdle, like a kid medical thing or whatever may come up, and you don't really have, if you're not operating, like, I feel like right now, if something terrible happened in my life, I would handle it without going back to the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that. But when you're in, like, when you're not healthy, then when things, hurdles come your way or whatever, then that's just what you go to. And so I think that's a big part of it. But the other part I don't think people talk about that much at all is with dudes. I don't even know if I thought this until I went through all this, and now I've heard from 500 different dudes who have either tried to quit, are quitting, going to treatment, whatever. But a few of them said it, and then I realized, like, that is a big part of what it is. It, like, alcohol, let's just use alcohol. It's something that you feel like you can do, and probably people don't want you to do it, but you're like, fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you get older in life, male or female, you're making way fewer, like, decisions of, like, you're like, I want to do this.
Yeah.
Your decisions are for everyone else.
Right.
And so you develop, or you, like, cultivate these things where you're like, no, fuck, like, I want to go have two beers during the, work week in the, like, late afternoon. Nobody can tell me I'm not. And you don't even really want to do it. You're just like, I have some stuff that I'm in control of. And that's a big thing, a big part of the reason I think men have a hard time quitting, especially alcohol men, is their wives are usually telling them to quit.
So then it's like you're succumbing to their
quest. And that's why they keep doing it.
Right.
You keep doing it, not even necessarily because you like it, that's but because it feels like you're giving up on, like, I'm in charge. And you know, then you're, like, basically admitting, like, this thing has power over me. Like, there's a thing on earth that if you grind this shit up in the right concoction and put it in front of me, like, I become weak. And that's a hard thing to admit. You kind of have to tell yourself, you know, well, actually, like, I have that and I'm able to overcome it, so I'm very strong. But it is a thing that, like, you're admitting I can't control this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has, like, implicit weakness.
Yeah.
And admitting that to your female counterpart is always kind of a...
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you did...
If that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. And you obviously did what you knew you needed to do, and for you and for the family. And I think it's, like, very cool. And I'm also like, what's it like to be sober? Like, because it has to be... It has to feel good. I mean, talk to me about the difference in your life now that you've given it up. Mentally, physically, everything.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, I don't even
want to... You don't feel like Superman?
No, I do, but I don't want to say, like, I don't want to say this because I think there's a place in society for alcohol.
Yeah.
And I just don't... I think, like, some of the best times in my life, there's no way I have them without social lubricant being involved. Like, places... I always think of, like, travel. Like, my wife and I ending up... like in Portugal talking to these lesbian Russian couple at 2:00 in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way I'm there without the bar culture. Like,
right.
It just is what it is. But yeah, I mean, the easiest way that I can describe it is, like, I was playing my life on hard mode. Like, everything is harder.
Yeah.
I was still trying to sometimes work out, which is like, what do you do? No. But like, I don't know. Like, I'm never tired. Like, I have, like, boundless amounts of energy.
Really?
Like, I'm starting with Game Day Men's Health, our studio title sponsors. I've started TRT treatments, and I might do some peptides because, like, I'm working out so much that I'm like, what else is there?
Right.
Because, you know, and I wasn't, like, going, frankly, towards the end of it, I was hiding my drinking.
Yeah.
It wasn't like I had a bunch of time that I'm getting back. So I do hear from people that are like that, like, well, I have all this time. That's not where I was. I was still doing it. But if you want to get up and go to a workout class at 5 a.m. or you want to go on a 20-minute jog and a little bit of downtime you have, it's a lot easier now.
Yeah.
And
how about your brain?
The brain is the biggest part because, and it's funny, I was thinking about this today. Now, this is way better, but now it's just like finances. But when you're an alcoholic, especially when you're in, like, the real throes of it, it is insane how much of your brain power is being used to think about alcohol. Like, when am I going to drink again? How am I going to get it? How am I going to hide it? Like, oh, I've got to take a piss test for my wife in a week. I need to not drink for a week.
Right.
I'm drunk right now. It's the evening. Let's see if I can act like I'm not.
Right. Just always a little wheel just spinning in the back of your head.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's always on your mind. I say with finance just because I feel like that's like the default thing of, for me, like in my mind, I'm like, what if I could pay this off with this and this and that? Like, if you're not like making as much or whatever as you right. want, but that's like normal.
Yeah.
But yeah, your brain, I mean, first of all, like as far as brain fog, you're going to get that when you get older, no matter what. I do think that treatments help with that, but, you're being a few drinks every day or more. It's insane to think that you're going to be able to function like a normal person and age at the same time. You're basically just giving steroids to aging.
Yeah.
If you're doing it at the degree that I was. So I don't know. I'm just happy. Like there's another thing. And I think your guests may know something about this. Certainly they'll know about it. They may be able to speak about it, but there's a thing that happens with alcoholism, with any addiction. It's really all about your dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a series of YouTube videos you can find called Pleasure Unwoven. It's actually like a 2-hour video that is like $300 because you can only see it at like treatment centers, but you can find it on YouTube broken up. And what it is this guy, he's a Navy doctor who got addicted to pills. He was writing his own scripts. He was stealing them. And now he's a doctor who studies addiction. Basically, your body operates like at a level of trying to get dopamine from like, let's say you eat a piece of chocolate, it goes up a little bit. Let's say you see a family member, it goes up a little bit. Let's say you have sex, it goes up a lot. Let's say you drink alcohol, it's going up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So when you keep doing those behaviors, chasing dopamine hits, it's resetting your baseline dopamine levels that you need to feel normal.
Mm-hmm.
So if a drink makes you feel a 5 and yeah. you're like, I'm feeling nice right now, I might need 2 drinks to get to 0.
Right.
And to make me happy, I might need 4 when you need 1. And it's the same thing.
The more you do it. So you're just always chasing.
With food,
yeah.
with people who have sex addictions, with people who have any sort of dopamine related thing, that's what it is.
And, yeah.
And that's the biggest thing is that when you remove that from your brain, you're then able to enjoy the normal things that human beings are supposed to be able to enjoy, like a fucking sunrise or
right.
your daughter's smile, because that's all that's happening is that your body is resetting what it takes for it to feel happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've removed that. So like ice cream makes me like ecstatic, like legit.
Giddy. Yeah.
Like the fact that I'm like just working out makes me happy. The fact that I'm just like here makes me super happy.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome on
well,
that front.
That's awesome. I know it's not easy. Any of the things that you've had to do, and a lot of people don't take that step and maybe should.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I'm not trying to do like the shameless thing, but like I wouldn't have done it without Kristen. Like I'm not going to say like, oh, I would have killed myself because that's like a serious thing to say. But like, I'm telling you that I was on a path that had my mom or my wife not been like, yo, we don't know. My wife's case would have been like, you're not going to be around and I don't think you should be around the kids. And she would have been right. I wouldn't have done it. Probably.
Yeah.
I don't think. And if I would have, maybe Dan would have been enough, but I owe Dan, my wife and my mom, because like once you get over that hump, it's not that hard.
Right.
You got to get over the hump.
Yeah.
And that's a different story.
Right.
Cause I hear nonstop now. From people. It's less than it was at first. It's maybe a couple times a week now, but you know, I know that's the thing. It's the hump. It always starts with people telling me, I don't think I could ever do this. I don't even know what it would look like. And I'm like, I remember exactly what that felt like.
Right. And now you can speak to it from the other side.
Exactly what it felt like.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Kristen's the best. She's a wonderful I'm just proud of all of y'all. I love your whole family, as you know. So I'm proud of all of y'all for kind of getting over that hump, if you will, and now being on the other side. And you spoke about our upcoming guest, and I think she's going to be a wonderful person for us to talk to about a little bit more of this type of stuff. So we will bring her in. Time now for the TMG News Desk with a couple of sponsors this week. One of those, our friends over at One Day Doors and Closets. They came into my house and replaced a bunch of our doors in our house, made a huge difference. They can replace your interior doors in one day with no messy construction in your house. They save customers 30 to 50% compared to those big box stores or handymen. I feel like a lot of people just don't know that there's companies out there that can do this, and they go to the Home Depot or the Lowe's. And try to kind of do it themselves. This is the way to go. In most cases, they're replacing builder grade hollow doors with solid core or real wood doors, and they make a huge difference, especially when it comes to cutting down on sound transmission in your house, which has been huge in my world. We do have a promo code, buy one, get one free on your doors, onedaytexas.com/promo30. And the phone number, if you want to give them a call, 940-969-4790. They also have a showroom in Louisville. But you can just call that number, go online. They'll come out to your house and have like a consultation and kind of tell you what will go into the process, which is super easy. Thank you to One Day Doors and Closets. This segment also brought to us by our friends at Braintopia Neurofeedback Centers. And Sandra Hooper is here. She is the owner of Braintopia. And Sandra, first of all, just thank you so much for coming today. I've been really excited about this.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. So neurofeedback is something that is kind of new-ish to my world. It's something that I think people who have been listening to the show have been following along with me, kind of telling the audience that I'm starting with you guys, but also even following along prior to kind of what took me to this point. And that's all because this is something that I discovered because of my son and because of the situation that we were in with my son, Ryder, who is about to be 10, but really like the whole, his whole last grade, third grade year, 9-year-old year was really tough. And he ended up getting diagnosed with multiple things when I finally went and sat down and had him tested. So I was just kind of trying to figure out what to do with all of these diagnoses. I never know how to say it. Diagnoses.
You can say it however you want.
Right? Yeah.
There's more than one of them. You need a break.
There's a lot of them. And I came across you, and it was cool. It was super organic. It was actually my mom had somebody that was in her prayer group in Austin who kind of heard her talking about a little bit about what we were going through and reached out to her after and said, hey, you have to try neurofeedback. So then I go Google it. Y'all were one of the first ones that popped up, gave you a call, and kind of the rest is history. And Jake's here today too. You didn't get to hear the conversation we just had, but he's first of all, a father of two. Mm-hmm. So he has kids that, you know, he's trying to take care of, learn about their brains and what's going on with them. And then also he's been through a journey himself where he is now.
I'm an alcoholic.
Former.
You always like you, when people try to say it, they're like, I'm an alcoholic. Yeah.
He's been through a journey himself. And
yeah.
Now he is sober and he went to rehab and learned a lot about himself and just.
Well, congratulations about that.
Well, yeah, thanks. Yeah. I think I've always been somewhat interested in the, I don't know, whether it starts with trying to learn about free will and mm-hmm. these sorts of things or just what's happening
right.
upstairs. But then, you know, I don't know if you're aware of this or not now, but they introduced the concept of neuroplasticity pretty early in recovery now.
Yeah.
Because it's like a tangible thing that you can tell somebody like, hey, I can actually show, because again, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but there's right. When you do like the whole disease choice thing, like people really in the disease thing are like, well, show me like how, and when you can actually have brain scans that show like time elapsed and like the development of neuroplasticity over time, it's like they introduce it quickly now.
Right.
Because they want you to know like this is a real thing, and it worked. I immediately was like, okay, let's go. Okay, there's actually a way to fix my brain.
Well, yeah, it gives hope that
right.
there's a solution.
Yeah.
Beyond just like, are you feeling good?
Right.
Like, I want to know.
There's a reason why all these things are happening. Yeah. Like, there's a reason why we're the way we are. There's a reason why we're wired certain ways. And what I love about learning about neurofeedback is there's something we can do about it.
Right.
So I guess first of all, because a lot of people don't know what it is.
Yes.
So let's start there.
Right. Okay. So my story is very similar to your story, because it's appropriate that we're on the Mom Game podcast, because my journey in neurofeedback started as a mom. And we were looking, my son was the same age as Ryder when we looked into this. And what I was looking for, the journey of our family is my son's adopted. And so when we knew that we were going to potentially run up against some I don't want to say mental health, but some things, ADHD, different things that most kids are suffering with. And we know we didn't want to go the medication route because we didn't know how his brain was going to respond to that. And I think a lot of parents are in that same boat. So when we found neurofeedback, we were on vacation in Hawaii, and I was like, what am I going to do with this 9-year-old who was in third grade? And yes, happens very, very familiar story. And so looking into that, found it through a friend of mine who I went to high school with. And as I got into my certification process with neurofeedback, I realized that all of my education, I'm an educator by nature. So all of my education really aligned with what neurofeedback was saying, which was the idea that there are different parts of the brain that control different things, whether it's learning functions or whether it is emotions. And if that area gets dysregulated for whatever reason, which we'll talk about in a little bit, what some of those reasons can be, then there's going to be a reaction by the brain, because the brain is trying to protect itself, and basically dysregulation happens, whether it's inflammation or just too fast, too slow brainwaves. So what neurofeedback actually does is we use a QEG brain map to identify where the areas of dysregulation are. You get a 15 to 16 page printout of all of the information about your brain, which we have right here in front of us.
Brought mine.
And then we have a conversation about what neurofeedback is going to do. The actual process of neurofeedback gets those brainwaves back into organized patterns. So if the brainwaves are not able to travel effectively through a certain area, you are going to see a certain symptom based on the area that is controlling. And so we identify the areas of dysregulation, and then we work with neurofeedback to get those brainwaves back into organized patterns. The best thing about it, though, is the way that you're doing it is you're sitting in a recliner in a very comfortable situation watching a TV show. So people go, how in the world does that happen? But it is audio and visual feedback to your brain through a screen. So we always say screens probably caused a lot of this, especially for our kids, but it's the way that we remediate it as well.
So that is the treatment. The treatment is an input of audio video.
Right.
That's fascinating. How long does it last?
So a protocol, which is a full group of sessions, is 30 sessions and then 2 additional remaps. So the best thing about this, too, is that, like you were saying, it's not just it's not just subjective data, like how are you feeling? That's a part of it, because symptomology is very important, but it's also objective data that we're marking all along the way. So every session we're watching how the brain is reacting. During the session we're watching. So the person who's doing it feels like they're just watching a show of their choosing, which is why it's so beneficial for kids.
Yeah.
And why kids will do it, because like we tried with my son to do talk therapy, and he's like, oh yeah, whatever. He learned really early what to say to the therapist, and then everything was my fault as a mom. I'm like, this is not okay. We're pulling you from this. But I mean, it just for kids, it's really effective. For an adult that's dealing with anxiety or something, it's very effective because you're doing something that is relaxing to you. But we have objective data through all of the different tools that we use to watch how the brain is progressing, to be able to show you what's happening instead of just, you know, what are you feeling?
Right. It's so cool. So we went in first for Ryder's brain map with Sandra, and in looking over the results, I mean, you almost get goosebumps, because it's like, okay, because of this part of his brain has more activity, mm-hmm. and I'm probably saying this wrong, this could lead to anger. This could lead to, what was the rumination?
Rumination,
oh my
perseveration,
gosh.
Yeah.
And how do you explain what rumination, like it was so
right.
him.
Right. So perseveration.
Also a big rehab topic.
It is rumination. Very much so. Yes.
Yes.
Well, and that's a big addiction issue as well. So perseveration is the fear of worst case scenario. So that leads into anxiety and worry. And then rumination is part of the negative feedback cycle. That means once something happens, we have a really hard time getting over it.
Yes.
And so it just keeps circling in our minds over and over and over. And unless you do something to break that, you're going to keep having that circular motion, which just leads you to making one bad choice after the next.
Right. And just kind of stewing on things. And then, like, you know, so his diagnoses.
There you go. You got it. Good job.
Like, because I've talked about it on the show, and, you know, I think he'd be fine with me talking about it, because he's on this journey too to better himself. And he's only 9, but like, he loves learning about himself. He loves talking about it. He knows exactly what he's doing when we go in there. He's very in tune with the fact that he's getting better, that he's feeling better. And my point being, I'm justifying why I'm saying his diagnoses.
Yeah.
But he was diagnosed with with ADHD, with anxiety, with level one autism and depression. And that one just killed me, like, mm-hmm. for a 9-year-old boy. But what's interesting to me is, like, you can be born with these. This can be something that you're born with. It can be a chemical thing. It could be a brain thing. And until I really saw that brain map, you know, as a parent, you're feeling like, what did I do? Like,
right.
There's
shame
wrong?
Involved in it.
There's
there doesn't
a lot
need
of
to
shame,
be. Yeah.
Especially with that word depression, right. you know, because your whole purpose as a parent is to have a healthy, happy kid.
Right.
And I felt like I was doing everything in my power to do that. And so it's just really cool to see it, like, printed out that way, that, like, there's something going on with his brain. And what you explained to me is it can be, you know, inflammation. It can be other things that are leading to this. You mentioned food sensitivity. Mm-hmm. You mentioned mold. And I'm like, bam, bam. Like, he had just been diagnosed with, or not diagnosed, but we found out he was sensitive to cow's milk. And then yeah. I think there's a mold cabinet kitchen situation going on in my house. We're about to have it all wiped out. We're moving as quickly as we can. But I think it's just knowing that there's a lot of external factors
right.
that can affect your brain and therefore your behavior and therefore your happiness, your life. You're getting in trouble at school. You're getting in trouble at home. I just think for me, it's been so cool, so eye-opening. And I think probably for you, being able to see people have those same realizations and kind of right. Figure out why at your core you or your kids or your loved ones are having this outward behavior. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting. It's an interesting process because we take a 4-pronged approach at our centers with looking at environmental factors, because mold and mycotoxins. So our family has a big tie to that. My dad is an MD and he had a mold and mycotoxin laboratory that my husband was the CEO of for 25 years. My husband was involved 15 years. And we saw what neurologically mold can do to the brain. And one of the major things that helps the brain fog and getting past mold exposure once you're metabolically cleared from that is neurofeedback. So that's what people don't understand, is when there's any kind of injury to the brain, or when the brain is, whether that's addiction, whether that is injury, whether that is food sensitivities, whether that's mold exposure, trauma, all of these things, the brain will encapsulate the part that's exposed with white matter inflammation to protect itself. And that does not go away unless something is acted upon it. And so that's why we're seeing professional athletes that go, you know, 20 years after they're done playing and in their mid 40s, now we're having ideation or we're having major issues, because that has sat there in their brains for so long. And so neurofeedback, that's my, as an educator, it's my job now, I feel like, to just let people know that this is something that we want to, you know, you have a injury in high school, don't let it sit there. Don't you go through your protocol, but then you have to come and see where that inflammation is sitting, because these effects are long lasting. And so that can happen when a child is in utero, if there's a food sensitivity that they are exposed to, even in utero.
Wow.
That happens and you don't even know.
Right.
You know, none of us know, because our kids don't show signs until much, much later. But their brains are being affected by that. So there's so much that just letting parents know that there's options, and that, and sometimes medication is not the right thing for everyone. We're not anti-meds, but it's not right for everybody. And so we want people to know that there's an option, especially if medicine is not something that their child can tolerate
yeah.
or themselves can tolerate.
Just looking at the website here, I mean, it makes sense, obviously, everything begins with your brain, but between TBIs, sleep issues, substance abuse, anxiety, as she said, ADHD, what is the tab peak brain performance mean?
Peak performance. Okay, so there are people who come in and want to be involved in neurofeedback, and I'll look at their brain map, and as much as you want to say, sure, everyone needs it, we need to be honest with people too, and there's sometimes people come in and their brain just looks pretty solid and they don't necessarily need it, but they still want to do it. So peak performance is for anyone who wants to focus a little bit better, or we like to say it's like that CEO who just wants to, or that professional who just wants to take it to the next level. If sleep is always an issue for everyone, everyone can have better sleep. So that's just kind of an epidemic in our country in general. But peak performance is just that person who wants to take their brain. We call ourselves Braintopia. My son named that company, which we love. But it's, you know, there is no utopia for the brain. There's no perfect brain, but we want to get you as far as you can go. And so peak performance can be someone who doesn't necessarily have a diagnosis or doesn't necessarily want a diagnosis, but wants to get themselves to that next level. So that's what peak performance is.
Brainroids.
Yes, correct. In the safest way, but yes, in the safest way possible.
So what do you think about the way, I guess, it is traditionally handled where you go to a doctor, you do the testing, you get the diagnoses, they give you some medication, and you kind of go on with your life. Like, what do you think about this, knowing that all this information and this different approach to it is out there?
Right. So part of me says that, well, I will go on record saying that the system is a little bit broken.
Yeah.
In the fact that, again, we're not anti-meds. There are people, I'm on meds. There are meds that we need to make sure that we're functioning well. However, every single person should know what their brain is looking like and what they are susceptible to. So if we don't know how our brain operates, for example, let's talk about ADHD. A lot of people will think that ADHD is an overactive brain, right? That's hyperactivity, you know, is in the name. So people think that, well, it's actually our fastest moving brain waves being in a too slow pattern, which is why they would give a stimulant to somebody. Mm-hmm. So we have to stimulate the brain. However, if we don't know what our slowest moving brain waves are doing, which control emotion and sleep and eating patterns, then we're giving a stimulant for this part of the brain, but this part of the brain is already way up here and is now being stimulated even more. So what might we see? Trouble with eating, which is why a lot of kids are getting skinnier as they're on their meds, because they don't want to eat. We're seeing sleep issues. So if you're not sleeping well, your emotions are going to be out the you can't control your emotions. Is that an ADHD thing or is that a sleep thing? Well, we're going to argue it could be sleep. Or if you can't control your emotions anymore because we're taking a frontal cortex, a frontal lobe of the brain that is already overstimulated and stimulating it more, making it more susceptible to any kind of triggers, more susceptible to any sensory motor issues. So now we're seeing something, oh yeah, we can focus a little better in school, but now we're way up here with all, or our job, because adults are having it too. And so we need to know how the brain is operating. And if you truly have an ADHD brain, we need to understand that, yeah, this stimulant may help in this area, but these other areas it's not going to. So educating that a process, which is why some parents will come to us and say, or adults will say, these meds just don't work for me. I don't think there's any hope. And we're like, yes. And so I get to explain to them, this is what your brain looks like. This is how it's operating. And this is why medicine or certain medicines don't work as well as you would hope. Mm-hmm. And so here's another option. We're all about options. And that's what I think of. Anytime there's only one direction, that's not truth and that's not correct. And so we want to open the idea and the conversation that there's options. And that's what neurofeedback is for us.
Feels like the future.
Right.
Yeah, it really does. So how much of what you're trying to do is spread the word, educate people, and kind of make this more of a like a household thing that you hear more in conversations? Because it's so amazing. I'm seeing it firsthand. We talked this morning, Ryder's like about 10, 11, 12 sessions in, and I'm seeing a huge difference with him. You said that's about the time that you start to see this with people, is about that 10 to 12 kind of session range. And now I can see how once you do it, you want to tell everybody about it. And I think you've made a whole career of this and created your business because of it. But how much of your job is that? Just informing people and spreading the word.
I'd say at this point, it's 100% of my job, because that's what I feel like I'm called to do, is be an educator in whatever field I'm placed in. And we use what we call mom-to-mom marketing. No offense, dads, but we love to be able, we feel like a parent telling another parent about something that is effective for their child, or an adult telling another adult something that's effective for them, is the best way to get the word out about us. And so that's what we want to do. And so my job is to let people know, again, from every stage or every, you know, platform that I can, that there is an option that is out there. And then helping people to understand, with knowledge is power. So to help people understand why this is happening to them, because fear and anxiety happen when you don't understand something. So that's what we use our social media for. That's why we're here today. It's just to educate people about what it is. It's not scary. It's not electricity being put into your brain. It's not shocking you. It's safe for kids. It's just, you know, it's not a magic bullet, because there is no such thing, but it is a great tool to get you to the next step of where you want your brain to go. And so we need to tell everyone about it.
Well, it's been so amazing. It's been so amazing to see it kind of firsthand with him, and realize what all had been going on that I didn't realize, that I didn't know why he was having these kind of anger bursts and that kind of thing.
Right.
It's so cool.
As far as adoption goes, how close, not the adoption that you did, how close are we to like insurance and like that sort of thing?
Yeah.
You know, that's like the next...
So that's a great question. That is always, so there's a conspiracy theorist in me that I won't get into the whole insurance thing, but there's a lot of insurance policies that cover neurofeedback. The issue is there's a lot of practitioners that they won't cover, and there's just a lot of education that needs to go into, when you're asking someone to come to 30 sessions and twice a week and all of that, there's just some real challenges with the current insurance system. And so I will tell you things like, not malpractice. When you get hurt on the job,
right? Like
workers' comp.
Yeah. Goodness, that did, see, I'm working on this in my recall. Workers' comp pays 100%, like right out, because they know that they need to get their people back into working form, and that there could be litigation on the other side of that.
It's not their job to prolong it.
Correct. Yes. So I think just like ABA therapy and different therapies that are in the marketplace that at one time did not take insurance and now they are.
Right.
I believe that will move into this space. And we're just, we're just on the front end of that. There are some people that will cover with insurance. It's just a little bit harder to find. So I believe that it's on the forefront and it will happen. It's just, we found out yesterday, we visited a psychiatric or a hospital, a PHP program, and they were saying there's, with insurance, when you take insurance, you have to do medicine first and then you have to do counseling first. You just have to walk through all of these steps before you're to the point where that it will get covered by insurance. And so we take out that middleman. We're something, we get them in and get you going. Now it is out of pocket, but for some people, it's worth it because they just want to get into the healthier patterns as soon as possible.
Yeah. Well, it's been awesome. I'm so glad that we kind of crossed paths and that now I can speak to how successful this has been for me personally. It's life-changing. I mean, it really is.
I have several things I could throw at you, but I don't think Julie's going to let me. but this is something that I have like another side weird podcast I've been doing with a buddy for like 15 years. And I remember, actually, I'm not going to tell you that part. But the issue, I think we should have a different classification legally for like 17 to 23 year old males. I think we should have, and maybe females as well, like we should have some sort of non-adult, non-child.
Yeah, I've heard you talk
in between.
Based on the development of your, like of your decision-making portions of your brain. And see, that's where it gets tricky because like you'll have cases of people who have like brain tumors or something, and their behavior will change radically, like radically. And all of a sudden, you know, they're in the legal system. And that's like a, like, I believe your brain has a lot more to, like, I suppose nature has a lot more to do than nurture than a lot of people admit.
Yeah.
But like, if you open that box, it makes a lot of people very uncomfortable because you're like removing personal responsibility in some people's minds.
Right.
And that's why I think this is fascinating, is because if you can say to somebody like, you're probably acting this way because of this, then you can't like punish them.
as much. Or you can, let's flip that. Or you can hold them accountable different way.
Yeah. And you can understand it.
Right.
Really. But that's why I think this is so interesting.
Well, the prefrontal cortex, which we call F3, F4, is not fully developed, the frontal lobe, until you're 25, whether it's males or females.
The rental car companies know.
They do.
But the judge is like, you're an adult.
Right.
So and we do need to be able to support people through that. And one, educate them about what's going on. Two, at 18, the world says you're an adult. You're not. Like you are, but you're not. Like there's still a lot of development that has to happen still at that point. And something else I just want to say before we wrap is, you know, children and young adults are a product of their environment, right? So we can't expect our kids to be regulated if we're not regulated. And so that's why we feel like we want the whole family coming in and doing this. My whole family does it, my parents, everyone, and every single person who works in all of our centers has done neurofeedback and is actively doing neurofeedback, because we don't want to ask people to do something that we're not willing to do. So we have our own sessions. My husband just came from one right before this. So it is something that is a part of everyday life, and we stand behind that so much that we give family discounts in all of our locations, because we want the whole family to come in, because we cannot expect our children to do something that we're not able to do, which is regulate.
And even have the realization that you need to.
Right.
Like that you need to, that your husband needs to, or whatever. And that, they are maybe a symptom of the things that we have going on with
and
us.
Normalizing the conversation that that's okay.
That's
there's
okay.
Not something wrong with us if our brain is dysregulated. We have so many environmental factors, EMF sensitivities, food sensitivities, all this stuff that is coming at us all the time. We need to understand that we have to support our brain.
Yeah, I really want to do it. I think I told you my dad passed away of Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. So it's a real thing in my world. And then breast cancer survivor.
Yeah.
So I have the chemo. I have all the stuff. So I'm like, I really want to do it next.
Right. Yeah,
Ryder absolutely. And I can go sit side by side and do it. But I think too, for Ryder personally, knowing that it wasn't just like, because when he went and did all the testing and then you go and you
feel like something's wrong.
Get pulled out of your classroom and all that, which is great. They're helping him. But yes, I wanted him to know it's not because anything's wrong with him.
Right.
And this isn't just you. But when you mentioned like, people, famous quarterbacks are doing it. Like famous athletes are doing this.
Right.
I do it. You do it. Everybody is. It's available to everybody. I think that really helps the kids.
It does.
Understand that it's not just them.
And so, we don't use terminology like something's wrong with you or you're getting better or we're fixing things. That's not
right.
Because again, the idea of utopia is this is not a real place. This is just where we're moving towards. Right. So
yeah.
Braintopia is there's no perfection. There's always going to be things that we can work on, but we're going to make it the best that we can possibly make.
It's awesome.
Well, you got to kind of try to sell it to me. The way that they sell it is like it's you work out, right?
Yeah.
You exercise, so why wouldn't you exercise with
right.
your brain?
Well, and like we go to doctor's appointments every year for every other part of our body,
yeah.
right? Do we go to a neurologist? No, because you can't get into them unless you're the worst of the worst. So this normalizes the idea of brain health, and that's important. The brain is our control center of our entire body. We need to be given it. We have. It's a problem.
Yeah, it's like you have, your knee hurts, your ankle hurts. You're immediately taking care of
right.
it. It's like, obviously, if you're struggling, there's something wrong up here. And so
right.
let's figure
and
out
the,
how
the
to
same
get
reason
it.
Your knee hurts, which is inflammation,
yeah.
is why your brain is having issues. Which is inflammation as well.
That's crazy.
So it's yeah, but it's just educating people on that. And this will become so much bigger. Like you will hear about neurofeedback for a very, very, very long time. It's been around since the 1960s, so it's not new, but it's new to the conversation. And people are just fed up of not having options.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an option. So yeah, it's not going away. It's only gonna get bigger and better. And I just would hate for people to sit on the sidelines and go, man, I wish I would have started this years ago.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah, because it's a game changer for
yeah.
sure. Well, hopefully we can be a part of helping Braintopia become bigger and better. And
we'd love that.
Yeah, we want everyone to know about it because personally it's been awesome for me. And, you're in a tough spot when you don't know what to do and your kid's
right.
having issues. So to
right.
be able to kind of find something like this has been really amazing. And I'm super glad that you're able to take the time and come visit with us. So if people want to find you, if they want to take part in this, if they want to come check out a location, what do they need to do?
Right. I would go to our website, www.braintopiacenters.com. That's the start of everything. It can take you. It's a ton of education. It's there's some quizzes that say is neurofeedback for me. There's just a ton of information there and it'll send you to the next right place to make the next right choice for
okay.
you and your family.
And there are locations all across DFW.
We have 10 locations across DFW currently, but we are going to grow throughout Texas and likely nationally. So
awesome.
Keep watching. We're going to be all over.
Yay. Well, good for you. Well, thank you so much for coming in and chatting with us. You do have to do the cheesy ending to the show that we do every
right.
single week. I don't know if you remember it, Jake, but it requires a double peace sign. And then you say mom game out on the count of three.
Perfect.
One, two, three.
Mom game out.